Hello, this is Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and once again you're listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. I hear Hallelujah Hannah marching backward down the lane. I hear the loud hosanna of rejuvenated Jane. Lieutenant Isabella through the crowd, here she comes, raining blows with her umbrella on the cymbals on the drums. Hallelujah was the only exclamation that escaped Lieutenant Colonel Mary Jane as she slipped upon the platform in the station and was cut in little pieces by the train. Hallelujah, hallelujah, now the train is running through you. We shall gather up the pieces that remain. Here we are again. That little poem, by the way, is attributed to A.E. Houseman's brother, detraining after coming back from the First World War in London, to be met by the Salvation Army and a cup of lukewarm coffee and a moldy donut. A story apocryphal at best, but only pedants need know more. Yeah, this is Utah Phillips here with Steve Baker, who is turning the knobs, twisting the dials. That was the Borsdorf's wonderful music that you listened to open up. We are here in the studios of KVMR in Nevada City, California. We are very proud to announce the uplifting of our new antenna, which will increase our signal by at least 10 or 12 feet, and also a marvelous piece of equipment that we got to assist our weathercasters in making more accurate forecasts. It's called a window. Well, I had promised you that I was going to do a Paul Robeson show, a program of all Paul Robeson's music and some very odd things. But now, darn it, three or four very important things that I want to use have not showed up or are lost in my collection. And so I can't do that. I want to make it right, you understand. Besides, I got my one hand, my left hand, in a big, huge bandage, and it hurts like hell. I had an operation last Wednesday. And what I got to say is that I'm wroth. I'm a little upset. I don't feel quite right. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to do a morale show. My morale. And it's going to do things that I like and things that are going to make me feel good and hopefully are going to make you feel good too. Well now, it was Woody Guthrie. He was on his way down from the Rainbow Room in New York City up there in Rockefeller Center. Well, he was going to be part of a big show they were producing for the rich folks up at the Rainbow Room. They were going to use a real horse to pull a real hay wagon onto the entertainment floor there, covered with rustics who would be singing at the top of their lungs. And then behind them, dressed in a Pierrot clown costume, was to come Woody Guthrie playing the guitar as a strolling balladeer. Well, he asked one of the waiters where the restroom was, then on his way to it, he detoured, took the elevator back down to the world, as he said. Of course, it's on that elevator ride that he created his immortal song, standing down in New York town one day singing, hey, 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 hey. It was only an hour later that Woody was with Jimmy Longy and Cisco Houston, his Merchant Marine buddies, there in McSorley's Bar in New York City. And they got three sheets to the wind, you know, they did themselves in pretty well. Woody had to be carried home. The next morning when he awoke, he found a piece of paper rolled up in his typewriter, and on it was typed a song that he was unaware that he had composed during the night. Well, he took it out, went over to Almanac House, where Pete Seeger and Lud Belly and Barney McGee and Sonny Terry were hanging out, and he sang them the song. And Pete said, Woody, that song is a very depressing song, and nobody ought to sing a song like that. Now, you know you don't like depressing songs. You don't write depressing songs. And they stood around him over his shoulder and made him rewrite that song until it became what we now know as This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is Their Land, a candidate for our new national anthem. Nonetheless, that old song that was found in the typewriter that he typed late at night still survives in a packet of papers lost in a closet where Woody used to live. And I have that song. Now, I can't play the guitar. Of course, critics were always divided about whether I could play the damn thing anyway. I couldn't find a guitar player, so Dan Scanlon, Cool Hand Uke, happened by, and he brought in his ukulele. So I'm going to sing you this song, this lost Woody Guthrie song with the ukulele. As I was walking an endless bread line, my landlord gave me a two-week deadline. The local paper printed a better headline. No, this land is not for you and me. This land is their land, it is not our land. From your plush apartment to your Cadillac car land, from your Wall Street office to your Hollywood star land, no, this land is not for you and me. So take your slogan and kindly stow it. If this is our land, you'd never know it. Let's get together and overthrow it. No, this land is not for you and me. This land is their land, it is not our land. From your plush apartment to your Cadillac car land, from your Wall Street office to your Hollywood star land, no, this land is not for you and me. Well, thank you, Mr. Scanlon, very, very much. That I love the sound of ukulele. It was my first instrument, the ukulele, which I learned to play in Salt Lake City from my camp counselor. I was in Camp Ulatium, Jewish youth camp, and that met at the Presbyterian Church because we couldn't afford our own space. My camp counselor was a Japanese-American named Tetsuo Okada, who ran a French bakery called Piero's up on 13th East. Now, anybody want to shop around Salt Lake, they'll verify that. That's absolutely true. I didn't make that up. Well, I suppose that song is just as well lost, isn't it? And so we'll lose it one more time. Folks used to ask me when I come home from a long singing trip, and sometimes those tours will last up to 6 weeks, what kind of music did I listen to when I finally got home? Well, I'd get home from one of those singing trips, and I'd swear I never wanted to hear another folk song as long as I lived. So I'd listen to opera. I listened to grand opera. Oh, I loved the old ones, U.C. Bierling and Richard Tucker, the great Joseph Schmidt. I've played some of those on this program. Helen Traubel, Kirsten Flogstad. Most people think they call it grand opera because that's what you'd pay not to go. Well, remember Mark Twain. Mark Twain, on first hearing Richard Wagner's opera, said, "This music isn't as bad as it sounds." Nonetheless, we all have our favorite opera pieces. The one that seems to move me the most is, of course, Pagliacci. I have original recordings by Caruso singing that, but this is my favorite rendition of I Pagliacci.
When we was in the city, we was wondering where to go. A sign spelled out Pagliacci up in lights above a show. We thought it'd be a western till the stage lit up with light. And 97 people sung without a horse in sight. We couldn't understand them cause they spoke a foreign tongue. But we can give you some idea of what we think they sung. At once, there's a fat guy in a clown suit. Tain't Halloween, that's for sure. Then this here feller, this punchy Neller, begins to beller like we all was deep. That was Pagliacci. Something or other about Cuba. He sung about a lady who weighed 280. When she takes a powder, he just starts chirping louder. And he don't do a goddamn thing except to stand up there and sing. When we listen to Pagliacci, we get itchy and scratchy. This sure is top corn, so we go and buy some popcorn. We hate to go back, but we can't get our dough back. Ain't no
use complaining, 'cause outside it's a-raining. Later, we're still in the darn theater, taking turns of napping, wait for something to happen. Pagliacci, he ain't hurrying, but the folks on stage are flurrying, and it sounds like Ketchy Turian's neighbor dance. Then old Pagliacci finds a guy he's seeking, cheek to cheek, and with his wife he grabs a knife and stabs a louse who stole his spouse, and then he stabs a lady and himself. Tain't very sanitary. They all collapse, but old Pagliacci sets up, then he gets up, sings, I'm dying, I am dying, I am dying. We start crying, cause to tell the truth, we're dying too. As the footlights fade out, we see Pagliacci laid out, but the dagger never caused it. Pagliacci was plumb exhausted.
Oh, isn't that inspiring? Isn't that wonderful? What a way to come in off of the road with some beautiful, beautiful opera. On one of those trips, I was in a place called Grand Island, over there in New York State. It's over by Buffalo on your way to Niagara Falls. And I boarded in with some folks. Now, the fellow worked for the post office department. I'm telling the absolute truth here. The fellow worked for the post office department, led a fairly average and ordinary life, but he did one extraordinary thing. He, during the summer, caught these big green bottle flies, and he would put them into a milk bottle, put the bottle in the refrigerator, slowed them right down. While they were slowing down, he took little pieces of balsa wood and fashioned these tiny balsa wood airplanes. He'd take the slowed-down flies out of the refrigerator, put little puddles of model airplane ink along the leading edge of the wings of those little airplanes, put those somnambulant flies, their little legs, into those pools of ink. By the time they came around, that glue had dried, and those planes would take off and careen through the air in an abstract sort of way. I would go a long way to see something like that. Now, the thing about that visit, his wife, Judy Costanza, the one that used to sponsor the concerts I did around Buffalo, was a fine ballad singer. She sang in the old English ballad tradition, those long, beautiful ballads that are part of our archetypal history, part of the history that is borne forward through time so that we can share it now. A history that's more real, really, in many ways than our history books. Well, I want you to listen to one of those fine old ballads right now, an Irish ballad.
About a maid, I'll sing a song, sing rickety-tickety-tin. About a maid, I'll sing a song, who didn't have her family long. Not only did she do them wrong, she did every one of them in. She did every one of them in. One morning in a fit of pique, sing rickety-tickety-tin. One morning in a fit of pique, she drowned her father in the creek. The water tasted bad for a week, and we had to make do with gin. With gin, we had to make do with gin. Her mother, she could never stand, sing rickety-tickety-tin. Her mother, she could never stand, and so a cyanide soup she planned. The mother died with a spoon in her hand, and her face in a hideous grin, a grin, her face in a hideous grin. She set her sister's hair on fire, sing rickety-tickety-tin. She set her sister's hair on fire, and as the smoke and flame rose higher, danced around the funeral pyre, playing a violin, olin, playing a violin. She weighted her brother down with stones, rickety tickety tin. She weighted her brother down with stones and sent him off to Davy Jones. All they ever found were some bones and occasional pieces of skin, of skin, occasional pieces of skin. One day when she had nothing to do, sing rickety tickety tin. One day when she had nothing to do, she cut her baby brother in two and served him up as an Irish stew and invited the neighbors in, boars in, invited the neighbors in. And when at last the police came by, sing rickety tickety tin. And when at last the police came by, her little pranks she did not deny. To do so she would have had to lie, and lying she knew was a sin, a sin. Lying she knew was a sin. My tragic tale I won't prolong, rickety tickety tin. My tragic tale I won't prolong, and if you do not enjoy my song, you've yourselves to blame if it's too long. You should never have let me begin, begin. You should never have let me begin.
Oh, fine old Irish ballad. You know, I have not always been as you find me now. Once in the misspent days of my youth, which I am furiously misending to this day, I had aspirations to become a folk music collector. I was going to tramp the western mountains with my tape recorder, and I was going to gather songs, stories, ballads like that one, from the old cowboy towns. I was sojourning a fortnight in the rustic hamlet of Busker's Bung, Montana, where I attempted the folkloric interview of a tribe of laconic oafs who were ensconced upon the front porch of the general store, where they were ritually gorging themselves upon snow pie and Pepsi. One of them, a typical Montana cowboy, an archetype cowboy, with a low-sloping forehead, the close-set beady black eyes, the trickle of saliva out of one corner of his mouth. I mean, the real article. He would not heed my presence. He would not speak into my recorder. And I, with a fungo bat, belabored him seriously. It's a bat I kept for such occasions. Well, I didn't know that only earlier that day, a rude encounter with a tribe of local Cretans had rendered him an hysterical mute. You can imagine my chagrin. It was only 3 months later I was undergoing treatment at the famed Dumfarton Institute of Vienna, where the staff of that redoubtable institution determined that my desire to become a folklorist was a thinly disguised death wish. Well, as I say, the staff of that institution set about the reconstruction of my shattered character until they transformed me into the person the world now knows as Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, one of America's most feared folk singers. Quite a change for the son of an immigrant Jewish art forger. Well, I was going back through my collection of songs collected as a young man, and I ran across this one garnered nay purloined from the redoubtable Rodney Wax of Dirt, Wyoming. Dirt is up by dust, over by rock. Rodney Wax was a fine yodeler and a singer, but mainly he was a great chicken rancher in the tradition of the great sprawling chicken ranchers of Wyoming, notably Green River County. And he gave me this song indicating that it was to be sung to the tune of the old Irish immigrant song, The Pangs of Boils. Sing some cowboy music, it will make you wiggle your toes. That good old cowboy music will banish all your woes. I see you like cowboy music by the way you snap your clothes. So sing some cowboy music with your finger up your nose. Should be pointed out that you can approximate the high, tinny, nasal quality of authentic cowboy music merely by inserting your finger in your nose. You see how it flattens out the vowels like that. Of course, it's virtually impossible to play the guitar with your finger in your nose. Rodney Wax was not an instrumentalist. He merely sang. Your beautiful dreamer has busted your femur, and you'd like to cream her with a buffalo steamer. So sing some cowboy music and jump in the baling machine. Now, here Rodney Wax did a recitation endemic in this kind of old-time music. Haw, you chickens! Move along, you chickens! Bunch up, you dumb chickens! Hold on to them damned eggs, you chickens! 20,000 chickens, I gotta get them to El Paso by Thursday. Chickens! Jesus! We all sing cowboy music, though sometimes we don't sing the best. But sang some cowboy music was a cowboy's last request. So we sang some cowboy music and folded his hands on his chest. The sun was slowly sinking in the far-off golden west. You're dead on your Fritos and et by mosquitoes, and the gonzo banditos have stole all the Fritos. So sing some cowboy music with teardrops in your eye and your finger up your nose and jump in the bailing machine. Ha ha! Well, another forgettable song. Yeah, let me take you to old Sausalito many, many years ago down by San Francisco Bay. It was in the early days of the great folk music scare. I remember I was in a bar there. Oh, we were all drinking some. Fell on the bar stool next to me, fell off the stool, absolutely dead drunk. Well, of course, the first thing you do in a situation like that is you take his wallet. I mean, I don't mean you steal it. You take the wallet and you give it to the bartender, and that's to make sure that there's no question about it, you see, because the bartender is the one who's going to take the bartender is the one who's going to take the card out, and he's going to give you the address so that you can take the fella home, you know, by calling a cab. So he gave me the address, and I called a cab, and I picked the fella up. Well, he fell down at the door coming out of the bar. And the cab came, he fell out down getting into the cab. I got him to the address, and he fell down getting out of the cab, and then again up on the porch. Well, I rang the bell. Pleasant-looking woman came to the door. I said, "Excuse me, ma'am, but is this your husband?" She said, "Why, yes, it is. Where are his crutches?" Sausalito. Those were in the days when they thought that folk music was played in dark, dank joints, generally underground, at night. The ubiquitous red candle holders on tables made out of cable spools. I'm going to play you a very, very rare recording now from Sausalito. That's Little Sausalito Coffee House. This is in the early 60s, and it's the young Rod McEwen. Probably the first time he ever intoned publicly his famous Stanion Street. In there with a few local musicians. Now, I play this one particularly because it has the audience's response in it. Rod McEwen and Stanion Street.
You lie bent up in embryo sleep below the painting of the blue fisherman. Without a pillow, the checkered cover kicked and tangled on the floor. The old house creaking now, the car going by, the wind, fire engine up the hill. I've disentangled myself from you, moved silently, groping in the dark for cigarettes. Now, three cigarettes later, still elated, still afraid, I sit across the room watching you, the light from the street lamp coming through the shutters. Hysterical patterns flash on the wall sometimes when a car goes by. Otherwise, there is no change. Not in the way you lie crying. Not in the sounds that never come from you. Not in the discontent I feel. You fill completely this first November day with Sausalito and sign language. Canoe and coffee. Ice cream and your wide eyes. Now unable to sleep because the day is finally going home. Because your sleep has locked me out. I watch you. And I wonder at you. I know your face by touch when it's dark. I know the profile of your sleeping face, the sound of you sleeping. Sometimes I think you're all sound, kicking free of covers and adjusting shadows, running around in the bathroom, taking 20 minutes of our precious time. I know the hills and gullies of your body. Curves. I have total recall of you in Stanion Street. Because I know it will be important later. It's quiet now. Only the clock. The mentor of rejection tomorrow. Breaks the stillness. There are golden apples to be picked. And green hills to climb. Meadows to run when you're young. There are roaring rivers to be crossed. Bridges to build. Wild oats to sow as you grow. But later, on the other side of town, the apples no longer taste sweet. Bridges fall down, meadows turn brown. As life falls apart, we'll never know. On standing.
Authorities are carefully monitoring this edition of Loafer's Glory with Utah Phillips. I want to thank stations like these who are carrying the series appropriately in the Catskills, WJFF FM Jeffersonville, New York, and also KRCB FM over in Santa Rosa, California. You can write Utah at Box 1235, Nevada City, California, 95959, especially if you're a Rod McEwen fan. Or you can call us for a free newsletter catalog at 800-989-3825. Marketing support from Duck's Breath will return to today's show in just a moment.
Back again. I'm sure glad to welcome that station over there in the Catskills. In fact, to honor that, I want to play you some of my favorite music here. I've mentioned on previous programs that I spent the first 12 years of my life in Cleveland, Ohio, in an old Jewish neighborhood, 105th and Euclid, with my stepfather, Sid Cohen, and my mother. Right up the street from us lived the great Mickey Katz. At that time, Mickey Katz was doing orchestrations for Spike Jones, and you can hear those klezmer overtones in Spike Jones's arrangements. Well, and we used to hang out with Mickey Katz's boy, Joel Katz, who became a hoofer named Joel Gray. Well, Mickey Katz, you know, I love Mickey Katz. There are a lot of younger Jewish people, though, recently, or at least post-Second World War, who don't like Mickey Katz because they regard his humor, his satire, as stereotypical. And yeah, I suppose that a lot of it is, but I don't know. You know, the music of your childhood still has strong appeal to you. But then as Rabbi Podet, some years later, pointed out to me, said there's a difference between the humor of Jewishness and Jewish humor. The difference? Well, let's see. The humor of Jewishness would be two young fellows are walking down the street. It's desperately cold. Their collars are turned up. Their hands are thrust deeply into their pockets. One turns to the other and says, "Why don't you say something?" The other one says, "Get your own hands cold." You see what I mean? That's the humor of Jewishness. It's stereotype. Jewish humor, however, is far more abstract than inexplicable. An example, two couples meet on the dance floor. The conversation is like this. "Are you dancing? Are you asking?" "I'm asking. I'm dancing." You see what I mean? Maybe you don't see what I mean. Anyway, I really want you to have a chance to listen to Mickey Katz and his rendition of Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo.
Matzahs and knishes, it's so delicious. Listen, you all, here's a chew. If you are flicking, there's nothing like seeking for the baby, the bobe, and you. Sie müssen katschki, chapacholatschki, und morgen will Burche, it's true. A gläserle seltzer will straighten you out, if not baking soda will do. Himmische, mischunne, hu. Hulje, kedrulje, nu. He give me no choice, schlugs are kippers, I chattenuge, chuchu. He bobbin pitcha, a stick kaleva, please have some tegelach too. You take the rest for me, chulent is best for the baby, the bobbe and you. Capoeira, hoo-hoo, cucaracha and babelu, sambes and rumbes, quiles and bumbes, give a blows, little boy blue. Bagel and latkes, a risse and a gatkes, fafolte veronikes too. I'd rather be tearing a good piece of herring with a baby, the bobby, the bobby, the baby, the baby, the bobby and you.
The baby, the bubba, and you. Mickey Katz. Well, now, all right. What do headaches and television have in common? I leave it to your imagination. Headaches. One time I went over the Donner Summit here down into Reno to do some gambling, and I lost all my money. Everybody in Reno gambles, you know. They all gamble. I lost all my money. It gave me a terrible headache. I went into a drugstore to get some aspirin. I went to pay for them, and the druggist said, "I'll flip you double or nothing." I went out with two headaches. Television? Well, you know, I despise television. Oh, I hate television. I know people tell me there's some good things on television, but yeah, Mussolini made the trains run on time. Hooray. Now, the last television set I had, I drug it into the backyard and shot the damn thing. I don't know what commercial importunement finally drove me off the end of the pier, but I drug it into the backyard, tied a scarf around it for a blindfold, scotch taped a cigarette to the front, lit it, let it burn for an appropriate amount of time. And then I took a shotgun and blew a hole through it. It's still sitting out there in the bushes someplace in the lilac hedge with vines growing out of it. It's kind of pretty now. Well, headaches, television. Remember the old tune, Heartaches, Heartaches, Heartaches? You'll listen to this.
Headaches, headaches. Aspirin commercials give me headaches. Just when I'm feeling chipper as you please, that's when they show me all my sinus cavities. Headaches, headaches. Those sponsors don't care how my head aches. See that announcer, he looks so fine. His head should ache like mine. Headaches, headaches. Those pounding hammers give me headaches. They say it once and then they say again. Oh, tension, pressure, pain. Oh, tension, pressure, pain. Headaches, headaches. Those sponsors love it when my head aches. Mother, don't hand me those pills from the shelf. I'd rather do it myself. Sponsors love it when my head aches. There is one remedy that's unsurpassed, and their commercials give me headaches. Fast, fast, fast. Headaches, headaches. Aspirin commercials give me headaches. Today I swallowed the best cure yet. I ate my TV set.
Oh, yes, headaches, headaches. That's a fact, too. Well, now, let's see. We moved out of Cleveland to Salt Lake in 1947, Salt Lake City, Utah. It's quite a case of culture shock to go from an old Jewish neighborhood in Cleveland to Salt Lake City on the centennial of the Mormon Pioneer Trek across the plains to Utah, the Kingdom of Deseret. It was, and everything, of course, was about the centennial. It was like landing on another planet. One of the saving features of the whole thing was a disc jockey that used to work at radio station KALL. He worked there very briefly. A fellow by the name of Al Collins, Al Jazzbo Collins. Do you remember that name at all? It's a legendary jazz disc jockey. Well, excuse me, Al Collins just passed away. My brother, down in Vacaville, brought me up his obituary here, and I'll read you part of it. Al Jazzbo Collins, a longtime disc jockey, known to jazz lovers as the creator of the Purple Grotto, a fantasy underground that served as the backdrop for his radio show, has died. His listeners well remember an imaginary candlelit cave where he spun the tunes of Ella Fitzgerald, Miles Davis, and other jazz greats, and spoke in his oft-heard beatnik lingo with such characters as Harrison, the Purple Tasmanian Owl. Mr. Collins gained international fame in the 1950s and again in the 1970s with recordings of Steve Allen's Bebop Fables, a jazzy version of the familiar Aesop's Fables, that also became informally known as Grimm's Fairy Tales for Hip Kids. In the recordings, Mr. Collins narrated such stories as Little Red Riding Hood and Cinderella, while Allen played the piano in the background. Well now, for Al Jazbo Collins. And some good memories of Salt Lake. What I'd like to hear, I'd like you to listen to, is Al Jazbo Collins with Steve Allen and the Three Little Pigs.
Well now, little one, this is your Uncle Jazbo with another bedtime story, The Three Little Pigs. Once upon a time in the land of Ooh Papa Dow, there lived three little pigs. One of them was very cool, another was more on the commercial side, and the third was definitely square. One day, as the three little pigs were taking five, they heard that a big bad wolf was making the local scene on a one-nighter. Knowing that his approach signaled danger, they immediately set about the business of constructing shelter. The square little pig swung a quick GI loan, and in cut time threw up a real frantic bungalow, complete with wall-to-wall floors and a TV antenna. The commercial little pig laid out for a few bars, and then moved into a prefab joint out of the high-rent district. But the cool little pig goofed altogether, and at the last possible minute built himself a real purple light shack out of clarinet reeds and scotch tape. Well, sir, the big bad wolf blew in as advertised, and the first place he went looking for action was to the shack of the third little pig. And applying his hairy knuckles to the door, he laid down a crazy paradiddle and said, "Man, it's a raid." "Jack," said the pig, "it's after closing." "Don't hand me that jazz," the wolf said. "Open up." "Sorry," said the pig, "you gotta make reservations." "Charlie," said the wolf, "if you don't open that door, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down." "Just tell me one thing," said the pig. "What condition is your lip in?" Enraged at this impertinence, the wolf came on like Joshua. The walls came tumbling down, and in no time at all, the little pig was really gone. The following day, the wolf knocked at the door of the second little pig. "Who calls like?" said the pig. "Never mind," said the wolf. "Open the portal and give me some skin, pig." "Or give me some pigskin, as the case may be." "Not by the hairs on my chinny chin chin," said the pig. "Bless my soul," said the wolf, "it's dizzy." "No, it ain't," said the pig. "Well, then it must be, Jazbo," said the wolf. "Wrong again," said the pig. "Tell you what," said the wolf, "I'll just peek through your keyhole." "In a pig's eye you will," said the little pig, which angered the wolf so much that he forthwith blew the joint down and swallowed up the pig. The next day, the wolf fell by the domicile of the cool little pig and rapped on the door. "Have no fear," he said. "Big Joe is here." "Man," said the pig, "you've had it. Blow." "Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I understand there's a session going on here today," said the wolf. "I'd like to sit in." "I'm hip," said the pig. "And if you'll just slide down the chimney as per instructions in the script, I'll really give you something to sit in." At this, the wolf leapt to the roof, and in so doing, dislodged the brick, which fell down the chimney and clanged against the great iron pot in the fireplace. "What was that?" the wolf shouted. "E-flat," said the pig, "and man, it's your chorus. Fall in." And fall in the wolf did, down the chimney and into the boiling pot. The little pig clapped the cover on the pot and let it simmer for 48 over a low flame. When at last he lifted the cover, he smiled broadly. "Ah," he said, "my favorite soup, cream of nowhere."
A Zen story. How suitable for Nevada City here, my hometown. Memories of those times of coming out to Utah. We left Cleveland on the railroad train, went to Chicago, picked up the city of San Francisco. And we were headed up, over towards Cheyenne, Wyoming. I thought we were going to be surrounded by savages and summarily butchered, but we weren't. We were in the dining car. My brother was in the sleeping compartment, suffering a very colorful attack of motion sickness. And my mother looked out the window of the dining car and said, there are clouds on the horizon. We're coming into a storm. And the dining car waiter leaned over to see what she was looking at and said, ma'am, those aren't clouds. Those are the snow-capped peaks of the Rocky Mountains. So we did come to the Rocky Mountains. I'm going to play a sentimental song here, a song that means a lot to me, about those Colorado Rockies. You know, there are a few events that have altered the musical landscape of America more than the Woodstock Festival. Woodstock was not only recorded professionally, it was recorded from the audience. There were people out there with pirate tape recorders, and some of those turned out pretty good. I have one of those, of a very, very young John Denver up on the stage there, and he's singing one of his paeans to the Colorado Rockies, his song, Colorado.
Stuck in this old city now, where living ain't no fun. Where stealing glass and concrete cancel out the wind and sun. And I'm thinking of last winter now, when we walked hand in hand in the trails of the Colorado Rockies. Sang us a lullaby. The snow was thick as cream, and icicles were chandeliers like crystals in a dream. And the streams were strips of diamonds, and the hills were white as snow. And a bear ate all our soybeans in the night. Colorado's calling me from her hillsides and her rivers and her mesas and her trees. When blizzards snap the power lines and all the toilets freeze in December in the Colorado Rockies. We had time and space and freedom, we had love and peace to spare. Though we ran out of things to smoke, say and eat and wear. In the morning of the avalanche, the Yeti kidnapped Blanche, took her to his cave up beyond the Rockies. Colorado's calling me.
Hey, you!
From her glaciers and her canyons and her badlands and ravines, an infectious hepatitis was all that came to stay in January in the Colorado Rockies. Baby didn't die until we burned up all our wood. Considering we ate her raw, she tasted pretty good. And the fascist health inspectors dug us out, mailed us home. Except for Blanche, we wouldn't leave her maid. Colorado's calling me from her mountains and her rivers and her meadows and her trees. They tell me I'll be cured soon, thawed and ready to return when it's April in the Colorado Rockies.
Doesn't that bring tears to your eyes? Doesn't that describe it out here just beautifully? The West, the true West. Well, we're coming down to the close of this whole food for all here. And I'd certainly like to, I haven't really told you who it was that were doing all of these pieces here, and I'd like to thank Spike Jones, Tom Lehrer, of course, for the Irish Ballad, Rod McEwen for his absolutely superb imitation of a poet, Mickey Katz, Alan Sherman, who did that piece about headaches, Jazzbo Collins, and then the last one, Colorado, was the National Lampoon and their Lemmings show, which was a parody of Woodstock. And I hope you've enjoyed this. It's, as I say, been a morale show, and it's been intended to lift my morale. You're also listening to the Spike Jones Laugh Record, 1949, and also there was the OK Laugh Record, 1939. Well, look, let's check out on that. Let's listen to the whole OK Laugh Record. It's OK to roll on the floor and to pound on the walls, but just have yourself a good yuck, OK? Well, I've had a good time, a crackerjack time, and I feel a whole lot better about all of it. So thanks for being with me. Let's get on with our day. Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and this is Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Michelle Silverstein. Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my toys to break, so none of the other kids can use them. Amen.
This
show was allegedly produced at KVMR FM in Nevada City and distributed by the Pacifica Radio Network and the Moscow Gold Distribution Collective, Box 1235, Nevada City, California, 95959. Special thanks to Dan Scanlon doing ukulele as Cool Hand Ute. You've been listening to Loafer's Glory with your host, Utah Phillips. If you'd like to contact Utah Phillips, you can write us at Box 1235, Nevada City, California, zip code 95.